friends, and welcome to episode 40 of Youth Hacks. I'm Josh from YouthHacks.com, and I'm here with a couple of my good friends from JoelDS.com, Joel DS.
Heyo!
And from Sarah Libros. Wow.
Gosh,
I'm going back to earlier in 2011.
Okay.
From Sarah Flo with an E.com. Sarah Flo with an E. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
So we had an awesome show planned, and I'm sure we'll get to this later. We were going to have Phil Cunningham on the show, who I think some of you guys may know as the person behind the Steps of Justice or 30 Days of Justice. Wait, Steps of Justice?
Yes.
Steps of Justice.
Where did I get 30 Days of Justice?
Because it's something that you're about to start.
It's
in your subconscious.
Steps of Justice already is 30 days, and it's about justice. So. So from Step to Justice, he was going to come and chat with us, but he is out of the country, and I guess where he is, he's not really getting good internet or phone connection right now.
Basically, he hates us.
It's Cinco de Mayo, and Phil is in Mexico.
So is Cinco de Mayo even a thing in Mexico?
No, it is not.
That's why.
Can I just say something that annoys me when Joel flaunts in Spanish? I mean, I know we've discussed this before, but I just wanted to point it out again. Joel, you don't see me flaunting my sign language around for everyone.
Okay.
Well, I mean, Sarah, we're not on a visual medium.
Oh, huh. My bad.
So the first thing I think is worth mentioning is that we're going to just kind of bounce from topic to topic. This might be a little bit more laid back. But there is one important thing we need to talk about, and that is that I saw Sarah in person over the weekend.
That's so true.
Wait, how did this happen?
Fun. Well, I came to Atlanta for a wedding, but I didn't tell a lot of people because I didn't think I was going to get to see many people. Oh. And that was true. I didn't. So kind of last minute, I had like an hour and a half and I was like, oh, I want to see Josh and Leah and Ben. So I texted him and then I saw Heidi, who's our another friend.
So so just to point out to everyone what just a real petty person I am. When I saw other people after Sarah had already left, there were a couple people from church and I was like, hey, I'll give you $100 if you guess who I had lunch with.
You're such a jerk.
And people kept guessing, and then I would tell them only just a couple people, and I did it just to hurt them.
And were they like, what? She was in town and she didn't call me, and now I've just crushed about 5 teenagers' hearts. Thank you, Josh.
No, I didn't. I only told one teenager.
Which one?
Courtney.
Oh man, that cuts deep.
No, she understands. I told her, I was like, she was just passing through. Anyway, so but yeah, I really just said it because I have so little in life.
Sarah, were you by yourself?
I was.
Oh, I wish I could have seen you.
Oh my god!
I'm telling my husband.
Joel, have you met Kendall?
No, it was a joke. Huh. I've never met the guy.
Huh?
They had great photos together though for their wedding.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that.
Very cute.
This is a sweet moment of everyone supporting me in everything I do. Thank you, guys.
Anyway, it was very fun. You got to hang out with the boy. That was very nice.
It was so nice. Your little boy is super cute.
He's very handsome.
Really is.
So, we're just going to maybe – there's a couple of articles that are online that are fairly interesting that might be worth mentioning. So Adam McLean wrote this piece that I kind of want to talk about called Pop Culture Christianity. I don't know if you guys saw this. But basically he's talking about how every time there's any sort of pop culture event, everybody kind of feels a need to say, hey, here's how you frame this for your youth ministry. So like, hey, Michael Jackson died. Like, here's 5 conversation starters to help your kids talk. You know what I mean?
Ugh.
But at the risk of, violating the stuff that Adam laid out in that post, I think it's worth asking, Joel, so we're doing this show on Thursday, so it's been 4 or 5 days since the big news broke that Osama bin Laden was killed. Like, Joel, did you see stuff about this on Twitter and Facebook amongst kids?
Oh.
Was this a topic of conversation at your youth ministry or no?
No, I did not go down that road, but I saw a Twitter post of a local youth pastor who was doing a teaching on Wednesday night for his youth group. And it was entitled, How is Bin Laden Like Saul?
Oh no.
Man, seems like he was kind of asking for trouble there.
I don't know. I didn't see, I just thought, I was like, man.
Yeah.
I read the post and I was like, holy cow. Isn't this timely?
Wow.
So I never – well, I think it's no secret. We all used to work at a church in Atlanta together. And I remember –
What?
I remember when what's that guy, Dan Brown?
Yeah.
What was that book?
Da Vinci Code.
Yes. I remember when well, Josh, you were there. We were approached about, well, are you guys going to do something about the Da Vinci Code in the youth ministry? And I was like, no. And he was like, well, why? Everybody's reading the book. I was like, because no one in the youth group is reading the book.
Kids don't read books.
Right. It just reminds me of The Last Temptation of Christ. I remember being a middle school kid when that movie came out. And I remember literally seeing picket lines at movie theaters that were showing it. And because of those picket lines, I wanted to see the movie more than anything.
Yeah.
So I think it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, there's a way to engage stuff that people are talking about.
Right.
And I don't know.
Sometimes, I just remember the Da Vinci Code, there was so much anti-Da Vinci Code. I mean, there was curriculum published for this stuff.
Yeah. Well, now, a lot of this stuff, it's like people just see a way they might make a few extra bucks.
Yeah.
I'm
waiting to see some Bin Laden stuff pop up there, like legit.
No way.
Oh, it'll happen.
No, they're not going to do a curriculum about Bin Laden. No, well, okay, so but
if you want to do a curriculum on hell, it's like, you know, it could be an angle into it. If you want to do something about revenge or hate or forgiveness, yes. You know what I mean? Like, there's angles to go with it that someone might take.
That's true. I mean, maybe a talk. I wouldn't say, like, they're going to write curriculum on it, but
10 weeks on Bin Laden.
What do I know? I would say that I think if you're going to have conversations with students, maybe helping guide them in writing posts that may not be as offensive to people would be a good place to start. I know that's not necessarily what Adam's talks were about, but our blog was about, but I saw a lot of very offensive Facebook posts that made me very sad. So I think it is, in times like this, a good opportunity to take advantage of in your small group or one-on-one stuff, just to maybe ask them what they think about it and start a conversation and help guide them to a kinder way of approaching
I just want
situations.
To brag right now, but I had three students on Twitter tweet posts to the effect of that they understood why everybody was happy that Bin Laden was dead and the destruction that he brought. But at the same time, they couldn't help but grieve because he would never have an opportunity again to know God.
That's awesome.
Wow. That
Which
was,
really,
yeah.
I, it was, I was.
They obviously haven't read Love Wins because he has more, he has more chances.
Too soon, Josh. Too soon.
On which one? On both?
Yeah.
So our friend Jonathan Martin, who's a pastor in Charlotte, has a blog called PastorJonathanMartin.com, and he wrote a post to that effect. I think it's, you know, it's well written, but it's not totally unlike what other people have said, which is kind of like, you know, hey, maybe it's not the best thing for us to rejoice in someone's death, even if maybe it was something that needed to happen. And he got so much crazy criticism about it that he had to write a second post. I think both of those are worth reading over at PastorJonathanMartin.com.
Wow, that's crazy. Really?
But, you know, speaking of, you know, curriculum ideas for Osama bin Laden, just throwing some out there. You know, Osama bin Laden hid in plain sight for 6 years. Guys, do you ever feel like you're hiding in plain sight?
I hate you so much. Oh, do you ever if you were here, I would seriously spit in your face.
Sorry, I probably can't be tasteful and follow that.
But this is why. Never mind. I was going to say something.
I heard a Bin Laden joke today, and I'm staying away from it. So
that's good. That's good. All right. Yeah.
And also, I'm a Christian, so you know, I don't even believe in jokes at all.
Humor is evil.
Anyway, next article.
Well, but do you guys see people doing this much? You know, Adam talks about it a lot. I'm not sure I really see it happening that often. He's like, okay, people doing series about the latest Kanye West song, or people doing stuff about the royal wedding. Like,
oh yeah,
you see that stuff, Joel?
The music thing, yes.
Really?
Like curriculum? Like teachings?
No. Local youth pastors, yes, teachings. Not like published curriculum, but yes, absolutely.
I gotcha.
I went into a youth center And not to knock it, the youth pastor and I are friends. He just comes from a different place than I do. It's not something I would do, but he did a series on secular music, and they have this wall with this scripture about what goes in your heart or whatever, and then glued to the wall were hundreds of CDs that the kids brought in.
Oh, wow.
And that takes up an entire wall in their youth center.
Do they have another wall for fashion magazines or cable news channels?
Whoa. You can't put Fox News on a wall.
They had another.
It cannot be contained in a wall.
What was that?
Sorry.
Wow. They had one was awkward because they had one wall that was for their favorite porn sites. So that was a little awkward.
Wow. You're lying. I have to go.
Yeah, I don't really see this stuff happen a whole lot. Maybe it's just because I don't network with other people. I never meet any other youth workers.
That's not true.
Do you really not network at all?
You know what? There's not really an existing network in my area.
Oh, that stinks.
And I signed up on the National Network of Youth Ministers site in nym.org, I think. And they're like, don't worry, someone's going to email you in 24 hours. And that was like three months ago. So I've been thinking, Lynn Evans is on Twitter, and isn't he the guy that heads up that organization? Or no?
I'm not sure.
I don't know.
I was thinking maybe I should hit somebody up on Twitter and say, hey, I want to start a network in Roswell.
I thought there was one. We went to it.
No.
Up on Twitter, I'm still waiting for Tony Jones. Love the guy.
Oh, it's not going to happen, Joel.
Oh, hey, something that's really cool. He wrote a book called The Teaching of the Twelve, and it's all about this book, The Didache. And it's a really nice little book. I really enjoyed it a lot. And it contains the full text of the Didache, which is an old Christian document, along with his commentary. And now you can get the Kindle version for 99 cents. So even if you don't have a Kindle, if you have like an Android phone or a BlackBerry or an iPhone or a Mac or PC, there's Kindle software. So you can get his book on any of those platforms for a buck.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Also printed his Twitters out into a book form so Joel could read them.
That's awesome.
Did Joel just hang up because of that?
He may have.
Joel is gone. I think I just won something.
I think you did. Joel, are you really gone or are you pouting?
I'm pouting.
I'm sorry, man.
Oh, man, I thought I won.
So, I don't think that it's necessarily bad to do, like, the cheap time with the pop culture thing. Like, I know that a bunch of people, including a friend of the show, David Grant, did a dating series recently called Teenage Dream, right, referring to the Katy Perry song. I don't think that's a terrible thing. Like, I think, leveraging things that people are familiar with in order to help communicate a message is not necessarily a bad thing. Now, when you're using something to communicate a message, it's important. That's one thing. But it's another thing when you're like, okay, how can I work it so I can talk about this pop culture topic and maybe have it kind of vaguely relate to something that's kind of Jesus-y?
Right.
Maybe that's not.
I mean, I think that it's definitely cool when, there's a tragedy that happens and help students get involved, like help them start processing through what that looks like and why that happens. But I feel like that's different than pop culture necessarily. But I mean, I guess Joel's friend, I mean, that's what he did this week. He used a tragedy to bring it back around. So yeah. I don't know. I think if you are helping students process things that they haven't thought about before in relation to said pop culture event, I think that's, that can't be necessarily a bad thing. But yeah. I think it's when it kind of walks that line of like, they just feel a little hokey. I don't know. You just have to use your judgment, I suppose.
Hey, can I brag on something that's happening in our student ministry?
Yes.
A few months ago, Don Rock, who's been on the show, and I went to an organization in our community called North Fulton Community Charities, and they feed tons and tons of people every week. And so they were kind of talking about some of their different needs and ways we could support them. And it's a really, really great organization. And so one thing that was interesting is they get a lot of canned and dried foods, right? And give those out to families. But they're saying that some local restaurants or grocery stores kind of donate produce or other fresh foods like, you know, kind of when they're maybe just past the point they'd sell them, but they're still in, you know, good condition, so they can get some kind of fresh fruits and vegetables. And so Don had this idea that it might be cool to plant a garden, have the kids work it, and kind of donate all the produce to the charity. So they actually broke ground on it this week.
That is the best idea I've ever heard. Seriously. That's so neat? Cool. So cool. He's better than me in every way.
Well, he's handsomer than you.
That's really cool.
Isn't that a neat idea?
Really good
sounds,
idea.
It sounds a lot like the plantation that we run down here in Southwest Georgia with my youth group to grow vegetables. That's neat.
That is not true. Hey, so a friend of mine was going to go to an event in South Georgia, and he was saying it was at the so-and-so plantation. And I had to tell him, don't get your hopes up. In South Georgia, they call every house a plantation.
Oh, stop.
Right?
No, they do not.
Like, hey, come down. You guys want to stop by my plantation and have dinner? And then
you're like, you mean your house? No, my plantation. Yeah, it's...
Yeah, well, the house is on the plantation.
You know, like the three-bedroom plantation just like off of?
On my eighth of an acre lot. I think that's right.
I have a plantation loft, actually. It's pretty cool.
I don't even know what that means.
It's a loft, Josh. Okay, I was trying to be funny.
I think in Colorado they're called homesteads.
If we could just get to the pics so I can show you up, that'd be really nice.
We'll get there. Hey, All right. So Kenda Creasy Dean, who is brilliant and wonderful, wrote something that I think is what are the top 10 characteristics of a healthy youth ministry? So I'm just going to kind of skip around here and maybe read some highlights from the list. And yeah, you guys can jump in as you see fit. But number 10 is safe space. So I'll read here. It says, we live in what sociologists Ulrich Beck calls a culture of risk. She says, so there are a lot of dimensions, but what it boils down to is a loss of certainty or confidence that was once provided by traditions and institutions. She says, the upshot is a current anxiety running through our culture that we mask with consumerism, attention to self-presentation, overabundance of activities. So she says, young people need safe places where they can be themselves instead of trying to prove themselves. And so safe space can be time, relationships, physical space where the young people have the emotional, relational, physical, and spiritual freedom to explore, to risk, and to fail, and a safety net of love, not real love, not the Hallmark stuff. So basically saying that students need places where they can just come be, and they don't have to prove anything. They don't have necessarily lots of expectations laid on them. I don't know. When I read that, I kind of think, man, I'm not quite certain. Now, I am... We kind of subdivide that different aspects of ministry that we work on. So I really don't see the community group part of what we do very much. But just in the part that I'm involved with, I'm not really sure I create a lot of that. I don't know. I'm not sure that I really hit the mark there. Joel, does that any of that strike a chord with you?
Yeah. I mean, we definitely have areas of our ministry where I totally, invite kids to just be themselves. I've been challenged in some of those areas because people are like, well, you need more structure. That kid acted out. You need to like say something to them. But I just use like for one, we do a little thing around, I serve, my church serves two counties, really two different county school systems. So we have breakfast clubs. And those, I have friends that use those as like a time for like a Bible study or something like that. I use those just as an arena to just hang out with students. And so I have some students that come to that don't really come to anything else. And it's opened up arenas for me to, I guess, because of that safe environment, we've got into some in-depth conversations that have continued on in other venues throughout the week. But I guess as far as creating safe space, that's really one of the number one locations that we have where it's not very structured and it's kind of come as you are and we'll talk about whatever you bring to the table.
Sarah, when you were at Fellowship, do you kind of share my sense that maybe that's not something that's happening a lot or is it just something I'm missing? Sarah, you there?
Sorry, Sarah. I lost you for just a second.
Oh, I was saying.
No, I.
Okay.
Okay, now I can hear you. Sorry.
Did you miss my question?
I did.
Okay. I was saying, do you kind of share my sense that maybe we're missing the boat with that a little bit? Or is it just because I'm not actively involved in community groups that I'm not seeing that?
I mean, I think that it's hard to tell that from any large group of students. You know what I mean? It's hard to feel safe in a giant room of people.
Yeah.
So I think that because it's teenagers, they naturally have, you know, little cliques, and they have their group of friends where they feel safe. And so when they get into the larger group, you know, it feels less safe. I mean, that's just the natural, I feel like, way it goes. So I think that it definitely gets better as you get into small groups, and definitely, you know, one-on-one, to me at least. I mean, I viewed large group and small groups that we had as, you know, a way to connect with students. But as far as, you know, safe space that I tried to help create within our group of students, to me, it was one-on-one, or maybe like if I met with two students at the same time. But anything more than that, to me, it's not like a losing battle. I mean, I think that you build relational equity in all of these, you know, situations. But to me, I think the safest is, as it gets smaller, people start opening up. They start actually talking about, you know, what's really going on. And that's been my experience, but that could just be also my personality as far as like how I related to the girls in our group. So, yeah.
So another one here that I find interesting, I'm gonna skip down a couple, is integration into worship and congregational life at every level while maintaining significant peer groups of faith. You know, so I'm going to see if I can find like a, so basically she says, let's see here. Essentially the idea is that not only do you need to have, students interacting with students, but kind of an integration of the adults and the students into kind of one larger congregation. So we had an interesting conversation the other day, where we have kind of a new ministry at our church where we have a Spanish speaking congregation that's now meeting on Sunday mornings at our church, and it's going really well. They're growing, and it's vibrant, and they're very, very involved and doing great stuff in the community. It's a really awesome thing, and there are a lot of teenagers in the community, and so we haven't seen tons of them kind of jump in with what we do, which is what I think the pastors of the Spanish congregation wanted, we have this conversation, which is like, you know, how can we get them to come be a part of what we do? And I kind of had this pull for a second. Like, I was like, man, do we want to do that? Like, do we want to pull them out of that worship experience into ours? Like, you have this congregation that has not yet made the perhaps mistake that was made in other churches where you put this kind of wall of separation between the two, which is very, very difficult to undo. You know, is that something we want to do? And, you know, kind of what came back was like, well, yeah, there's risk there, but I think that is what we want to do because, you know, we have an opportunity to do really cool stuff for them. I don't know. Do you guys have thoughts or feelings on that? Joel?
Sarah, I was going
to. No, go for it.
You know, I saw this. It's funny that you mentioned a Hispanic community or congregation of your church. We hosted a conference-wide Hispanic gathering, for lack of a better term, at our church, where all of the Hispanic United Methodist churches in the Southwest Georgia area congregated at our church. And we thought that it was cool that we were going to do we were going to host a children's program for them. We were going to host a youth program for them. And then the adults were going to be in the sanctuary. And what happened is we were sitting down in the youth center waiting, and the Hispanic thing, they started in the sanctuary, and all the youth stayed in the sanctuary. And then they were like, well, do you want me to go pull them out of there? And it was really a dilemma of, I went up to the sanctuary, and the youth that were there for the conference were really, they weren't totally engaged in what was going on in the sanctuary. And so I kind of said, hey, listen, we'll just kind of meet, and then, we'll gather with them afterwards or whatever. But, I guess one of the Hispanic leaders went down up to the sanctuary and pulled all the kids out because they had somehow found out that we had planned something for all of the students to get together. But that's just one of those things. I think like what you said is, Josh, correct me if I'm wrong, but you kind of said is, you know, are we going to have them repeat maybe some of the mistakes that we've made? And that's kind of the way I felt about that. So I kind of saw that same thing. And some people might argue, well, you know, it might be cultural. I grew up in a Hispanic community, being Cuban. You know, I don't know. That's always been a struggle. Once you have kind of a youth group, there's that barrier that we set up between, I guess, big church with air quotes and, mm-hmm. and the youth ministry. And then now we try to do things like, I don't know if you guys do it at Fellowship, but you can try to have like Youth Sunday. And mm-hmm. that's kind of a big thing in the United Methodist Church where you try to like integrate students in every level of the worship service on a Sunday. But that's just one day out of the entire year.
Yeah. And we do similar stuff. We do, I think they call it multi-generational worship opportunities. And
yeah.
they try to make some of those happen. And that's good. But it's like, you know, it's one thing to have a special event. It's another thing to have something yeah. that's part of the rhythm of what you do all the time.
Yeah.
I think I don't know. To me, it seems like the big events, at least in the churches that I've worked at, were those the integration happens is in outreach situations. So whether that's a mission trip or some kind of local
true.
Community outreach, somehow it's sort of, everyone sort of puts their stuff aside for a while, whatever their problem is with big church or youth group or whatever. And they all kind of come together and serve. And so I think that that's been a cool picture to me, like an encouraging thing for the future. And I will say that it seems like when those things happen, that people step away surprised. Like, let's say you have a adult who decides to come on a mission trip as a volunteer leader for a youth trip, and they come back and it was like, wow, your students are so amazing and they're so mature and they're so helpful and their heart for God is, you know, and they just keep going on and on and on. And like all of a sudden they're our biggest spokesperson because they actually spent time, you know, quality time with our students. Or vice versa, you know, if we have a student that goes and helps, you know, hand out groceries or something, and they're like, oh my gosh, and everyone was so nice. I mean, I think that little things like that help to start that integration process. But I mean, it's hard, you know, as far as like the Spanish ministry versus like the youth ministry, which one's a better decision? I don't know that. But I do think that as far as integrating students with, you know, adults and vice versa, I think any way that we can continue to promote that in a healthy, positive way is a good decision, at least in my opinion. I mean,
you know, I've kind of had to fight this pull within myself where, like if I talk to a kid, I'm like, hey, are you going on one of our missions trips? And they're like, no, actually I'm going on another trip with somebody else in the church. I got this thing
right.
That's like, hey, we made a trip for you.
Our trips are better because they're for students. What are you doing?
And you know, and then I've got to tell myself like, quit being stupid.
Totally.
This is what you want.
Right.
You want kids to be fully integrated into the life of the church, but like,
exactly.
You know, as much as I would like to think that I don't have like a silo mentality or whatever, you know,
absolutely. It's hard not to, because
I'm training myself to let go of that and to think if there's something happening, like a service thing, or if kids are doing something cool that I don't know about, that's the goal.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't screw your schedule up, you know?
Right. It's like, what do you do all of a sudden when they're actually doing what you feel like you've been trying to like help them learn for such a long time? And then all of a sudden they're just off on their own making these great decisions and you're like, wait, no, but those decisions were supposed to involve me somehow.
Sorry. I know that you guys have something going on, but I already planned a social event for you that weekend. So you're going to need to move your... No, we really did. Our kids came up with this, an idea for an event called Worship and Waffles. And this is the event. On a Saturday night, they're going to bring kids from their school who aren't connected to a church. And they're going to play a bunch of worship songs and eat waffles at night. So this is the event they wanted to do.
Right?
That's
awesome, right?
And so that it was one weekend before my senior high social event.
Okay.
And I was like, you know, let's just do it. Yeah, let's not do the social event. Let's do worship and waffles.
Right, right, right.
You know, but there's, you know, there's a part of me that I kind of had to let go of before that, which is like, no, I've got this thing. And hey, you know, I'm a lot better at being strategic about what kind of events kids who aren't connected to the church are going to want to come to, and I know that you don't eat waffles at night unless there's chicken on them. I don't know.
It's true, though. That's
anyway. It's funny that there's just like this little monster that's in you where you kind of build up a kingdom. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Can I bring up one more on this list?
Do it.
Just because this is one that I've just seen an incredible transformation in our adult leaders. But on this list, number 5, a team of adult leaders who are actively growing together in faith and who embody the quality of community with one another and missional attitude that we want our kids to have. That's always been something that I know is important. I've had a really hard time implementing that until just a couple of weeks ago, really. It's just been like 4 weeks now. We just started meeting together with a group of us that are – a lot of them are involved in the youth ministry and some aren't. But just a group of people. There's 10 of us. And we are going through this repetitive reading cycle. So for instance, week one of our cycle, we read Colossians every day. Each person individually, and then we came together and would discuss it. We would write down thoughts, what we felt like God was showing us or speaking to us through Scripture from the book of Colossians. And we would journal about that, and then we'd share our thoughts with one another. There's no curriculum, and that's all that we did. And then we moved on to 1 John, and then we did Ephesians. And now we're doing Galatians, and it's this local dude here in Albany that kind of put together this schedule of reading scripture just for discipleship purposes. But what's happening is amazing in that the adult leaders, we come together and we notch out 3 hours every other Tuesday to spend together. And so we bring our families all together. We prepare, everybody comes, we have a meal together. The kids go outside and run around crazy, or we're kind of strategically located to one of the other couples that are 2 doors down from my house. So all the kids go to their house and play, and the adults stay at our house. And we start at 6, and we go as late as 9:30, 10 o'clock sometimes, just discussing what God has shown to us and praying with one another. And it's had an incredible impact in our youth ministry, just in the 4 weeks that we've started it. The kids notice the adults now hanging out Wednesday night. We're kind of an old school church, so Wednesday night family dinner is still a big deal at our church. But now the adult leaders are all sitting around a table together with all of our kids, really just making incredible bonds, not only through friendship, but through faith. And that's spilling over into our small group ministry, because a lot of these adults are small group leaders in ways that I never imagined. So that's just one thing I saw on this list that just really jumped out at me, just because it's having such a huge impact on our youth ministry right now.
Yeah, that's
interesting. Awesome, actually.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I think it's when I read that, that's something that's easy to pay lip service to, but probably pretty difficult to do.
Oh, it's difficult to do, absolutely. Yeah.
And it just seems like it would change the substance of what you're doing all the time with your students, you know? I don't know. That seems like it's a pretty huge deal.
Yeah, it's been great.
You know, I would think that there are probably a lot of things that we spend time doing that we think are important that probably should be set aside to work on something more like that.
Agreed.
Yeah.
There's a couple one here that I think are worth talking about, but the only one I didn't want to spend quite as much time on it, but she mentions, let me see here, the scrolling's really weird on this page. Keep getting lost. Okay, lots and lots of parents who are growing in and living out their love of God and neighbor. So, now this is what I would say. You know, there's some of that you can control and some of that you can't control, right?
Yeah.
So, but you know, the one thing that you can definitely control is your attitude towards parents. And I've been around ministries and pastors who had a sense of enmity with the parents in their community. And my experience is that does not work out. Like if, when you think about the parents in your ministry, you think of them as allies or partners or people who you're supporting and who are supporting you, versus, you know, looking at them as people who are antagonistic towards you, or people you can't trust, or people who you want to make sure you keep out of your meeting space. I don't know. This seems like a pretty big deal to me. I don't know if you guys have seen similar things, but it just seems like if you think that the parents are the people you're working against, then you're setting yourself up for bad stuff.
Yeah,
I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, I don't feel like I'm working against parents.
Yeah.
But I definitely, like, when I read that, man, I have so many students in the group that the parents do not give a flying flip about their faith at all.
Yeah.
And those kids are really plugged in because they want to be, not because they have to be. And that's the one that's, like, so frustrating to try to think positively about those parents and try to figure out a way to reach out to them.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, in youth ministry, your target is the student, but ultimately you're serving the entire family.
Yeah.
And so you've got to find a way to reach out to those parents and in some way get them plugged into the life of the church and get them to realize that what they're modeling spiritually is going to have the biggest impact on their student.
You know, I love watching David Grant when you go around with David. Yeah. David is the chaplain of every room that he's in. Like,
yes, he is.
He walks into a room and he's everybody's pastor. He's like, "Hey, I want to know about you. I want to know about your story." Like the waitress that comes up to the table, whoever, everybody that he meets, he's there. You know, and I feel like sometimes, you know, comparing myself to him, I kind of feel like sometimes I've got a switch that I flip on when there's a teenager. Where it's like, okay, I know that you're the audience, you're the target group that I'm supposed to be concerned about and ministering towards. So I'm flipping the switch on, and I'm going to ask you about yourself, try to get to know you. You know, I think those are good things. But, you know, then when it comes time for parents or other people around, I kind of maybe don't – I'm not as intentional with that. And, you know, maybe be worth – I don't know, worth rethinking that, you know? I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's just funny, you know, you just watch him and you think he does not see himself as – someone who is a pastor only to students in his community. He sees himself as someone who's going to reach out and be pastoral to everybody he meets. I don't know. That seems like I could tie in there in some way.
Yeah. And I think too, just having compassion on the parents too, because I had a parent once that got furious at me because I missed a meeting with their child and it was a total miscommunication all around, but she was furious at me. Like just, unbelievably furious. And I didn't really know how to handle it. And so I was just kind of backed into a corner. And so then later I was talking to someone else I worked with and I was like, I don't know what the deal is. Like, why is she so upset? I'm missing this. Like, it wasn't even a big thing. And she was like, oh, well, her husband just left. And I'm like, oh, okay. So it just kind of obviously helped me put things in perspective. And also just reminded me that, you know, if the student's hurting, 9 times out of 10, so are the parents. And so, yeah, I don't know. It is actually ministering to the parents is, you know, in the long run, also ministering to the children. So
that's true.
Anyway.
So, hey, let's get to our picks. But before we do that, I want to point out something. So if you go to youthhacks.com and click the support link, you'll see that we've set up some cool stuff where if you like, you can support the show. And you can do that by making a recurring or one-time donation, which is awesome. If you are a company or service, you can sponsor the show, which shows other services I've done in the past. And then there's a couple of things you could do, including some fancy t-shirts that you can buy. So if you guys feel like doing that, do that. And we're going to start doing Sarah, I sprung this on Joel last week, but this is my big idea is that
you're not allowed to just make ideas.
That's what I do for a living every day.
Well, you know, Sarah, he's about to, so get over it.
Yeah, get ready for this.
By
the way, there's a new font on youthhacks.com.
Yeah, I know. I have a crush on it. Continue.
And so anyway, so
we're such dorks.
By the way, I'm very offended that the shirts are only men's sizes. Whatever.
Are they? I'll make women's.
No, I don't. I wear men's smalls. It's fine.
Okay. I'll make one. Actually, Sarah, don't order the shirt yet because I've got to change something on it.
Is it possible getting a men's bikini brief with the logo?
You are the creepiest person I know.
So here's the idea, is that sometimes after we get done recording, we still chat for a few minutes.
Yes.
And that's always better than the shows. So this is my thought, is that we leave the recording going.
Okay.
Record a post show. If
you, that will get me fired from everything in life. Do you know what I say after the show's over?
Well, maybe you keep it PG-13. And okay. Then, so if you are a recurring donor, then what you do is you get put on a newsletter that includes a link to the post shows. So you get the post shows if you are a subscriber.
Cool.
That's my thought.
Do I also get those?
Well, I mean, yeah, you will live them, which is the greatest gift of all. Life. So let's go to our picks this week.
I was going to be funny again.
Can Sarah go first? And she thinks she's so awesome with her pick this week.
Yeah, Sarah, let's see your pick.
I hope that this impresses you because it really is awesome. So I was sort of having a little brain freeze with my pick of the week. And so my wonderful husband, Kendall, who is best friends with Joel Diaz, obviously, showed me this great website called TED.com. You guys heard of this?
Yeah, I watch it all the time.
TED. Are you serious? No, I've never heard of that.
Oh, am I just saying something that everyone already knows and I just discovered it now?
Yes.
No, not at all.
Oh, that's so embarrassing. I was like, oh my gosh, this is so awesome. And I like watched like 5 inspirational talks. And here's what I was thinking, though, is seriously, if youth pastors knew about this, they would use it in their talks. But
I think I talked about it on the show one time.
You're lying.
I swear I did.
I did a 10-week series on TED.
Did you? No, you didn't.
That's what it's called.
You're making me furious. Hey, Sarah. I'm sitting here. Okay.
Well, no, I'm glad you brought it up, though, because it's wonderful, especially for people who are public speakers.
And here's the thing is that in my mind, let's say you're a youth pastor. Let's just say, for example, you're listening to our show and you're a youth pastor.
Someone's typing really loud.
Not me. Sarah.
Thank you.
I swear it wasn't me.
You're lying.
I know who it was because it's the same person that types loud all the time.
Who?
Go ahead. It's Josh. Go ahead.
Oh, anyway, so the point
is,
can I please get through my talk? I realize that you guys have already heard of TED, but there is some person out there who has never heard of it. One of our 5 listeners. And
go ahead.
Anyways, to me, if you were looking for something motivational, it's a good place to start. Or if you're looking for an idea for a talk, or if you are looking for an idea for a series, there's just really good content.
Or if you're looking for how really smart people communicate in a talk that aren't in the church world.
Correct. I was just going to say that. I really also enjoy it because they're very good at what they do. And so if you are not a great speaker, maybe watching this for a while will give you some good tips toward becoming that.
By the way, so you say 5 listeners. We actually, we are getting many, many, many more than 5 listeners on our recent
show. Like 12?
No, many. How many is many more than many, that?
Like to the point where I'm going to be embarrassed to talk?
Well, I mean, it's not crazy amounts, but we had like Episode 35, 180 people listened to.
What?
34, 181. Yes, slow growth. We would be.
I think we would have
tons more listeners if we had done it consistently for the whole time.
Do you think we'd have tons more listeners if you replaced me with special guests every week?
No, I don't. Hey, can I make a recommendation for one of the TED Talks? There's a million that are so good.
I was
going to
say one too. Go ahead.
Do it. Okay.
Wait, excuse me.
Sarah, you give yours first.
Steal my talk.
Give your 5. Give your 5 that you watched.
No, I can't give all 5.
Okay, give 1.
Wait. Okay, go ahead because I have to find it.
Okay. Well, John Hodgman, who you guys may know from probably from a lot of stuff. He's written a couple of books. He's on The Daily Show. He was the Mac and the Mac PC commercials.
Yes.
But he did this TED Talk. Oh my gosh. It's called Aliens Love, Where Are They? And is that it? Yeah. And so he does this talk about aliens, and it is hysterical the whole way through. And then at the end, I don't know. It's just you have to watch it. It's one of those things where, you know, he's a great writer and he's also a very good speaker, and he gives this hilarious talk on aliens, and it ends up being sort of a wonderful, beautiful story about he and his wife. And it doesn't seem like there's a good way to do that. I'm just saying, if everyone who was a preacher watched this video, it would change the way that they preach. I'm serious.
That.
It's the best sermon I've ever heard, and it's not about Jesus.
Will you put that in our picks? Will you put that talk in our picks?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Mine was Caroline Casey. That's one I just watched right before the show. It's called Looking Past Limits, and basically the story is she was 17, she found out she was legally blind, and kind of just like how her life changed from there. Her sight became worse, she had to quit her job, and then just kind of what she did with her life from there. And it's really inspiring. She's a really good speaker. It's very captivating. So,
yeah, I've heard people referring to that lot.
Yeah, it's good.
I did not know what the story was.
Yeah, it's cool.
Joel, what's your favorite?
My favorite is Mike Rowe.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one.
Of Dirty Jobs. It was a great TED Talk.
Sarah,
cool.
I know we talked about this, because who's that magician that does the thing where he does the escape stuff? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do know.
Remember, I played you part of his talk from TED.
Kind of, yeah.
Remember when he randomly chokes up?
Here's what you didn't do, is you didn't pick it for your pick of the week, and that's what I'm doing.
No, it's an awesome pick. It's an awesome pick. Because if anybody has not seen TED, they need to see.
Are you talking about the TED Talk by Harry Houdini?
No. I can't remember his name. I keep wanting to say Chris Angel, but it's not Chris Angel.
Anyways, what were you going to say about how great my pick was?
It's an awesome pick because, first of all, if anyone does not know about it, they need to know about it.
How long? I mean, I'm embarrassed that it's been around for forever, and I just am like, oh, this is such a sweet new website.
It's been around for a lot of years.
Yeah, that's embarrassing. I apologize, internet world.
It was very, very good, though.
It's okay.
That's the place where
I was busy talking to students about their life.
That's the place where Bill Gates opened the jar of mosquitoes.
Yeah, it is.
I think you knew about it.
I've heard of it, too. I just don't think that I connected the dots of that being the landing place of so many wonderful ideas worth spreading.
Yeah, it's the best.
See what I did there? I took their little tagline.
Hey, Joel, what's your pick?
Okay, my pick is going to be like – sounds super lame, but it's a great resource. It's from the United Methodist Church. General Board of Discipleship. I put the link specifically to the worship section. This is a website that I use a lot. It's got just a lot of really cool resources. If you're like at a more like up to date church that's not as traditional as United Methodist Church, but maybe you're like me, somebody that didn't grow up in a very traditional environment, but always was intrigued by it, and you kind of like bring those elements into your youth worship experiences. There's just a lot of great resources here. There's liturgies that you can download and use. In fact, right now I'm looking at the website, and there's one section where it's responding to world events, and that's always updated. So there's prayers, litanies, worship services, and other resources that have to do with the earthquake and tsunami in Japan. There's one that has to do with North Africa and the Middle East and the protests. So it's a way to bring worship elements into your youth ministry that are a little bit more traditional, but have to do, you know, could do something with world events. Also, they have things, if you ever heard of like Taizé worship, there's a whole section on that. There's just a ton of stuff here for worship, things that you can implement worship elements into your youth gatherings. So it's something that I use a lot. So I just thought I'd want to share it.
Cool. Awesome. Thanks for your pick. I mean, it was no TED Talks, but
No TED Talks at all. Not something that's new and cutting edge as TED Talks.
Thank you. I don't like to brag. Josh, what's your pick?
So my pick is a book that probably a lot of people have heard of, but hopefully this will be a reminder if you have not read it. It's by, let's see here. It's called Hurt: Inside the World of Today's Teenagers, and it's by Chap Clark. So I think this is probably considered something of a classic in youth ministry circles. And the description of the book says, what do teenagers really think about adults? If you think you know the answer, you may be in for a surprise. According to Chap Clark, today's adolescents have largely been abandoned by adults and left to fend for themselves in an uncertain world. As a result, teens have created their own world to serve as a shield against uncaring adults. Based on 6 months of participant observer research at a California public school, this book offers a somewhat troubling but insightful snapshot of adolescent life. It will surprise and enlighten parents, youth workers, counselors, pastors, and all who want to better understand the hearts and minds of America's adolescents. And the Amazon review has, the first sentence is exactly what I was going to say. It says, if parents, educators, and youth workers were to read only one book about helping adolescents, this would be the one. I went to Chap Clark's Critical Concerns course at the National Youth Workers Convention last year, which, by the way, I think you can go online and buy the audio from that talk, which I would recommend doing. It's 6 hours, and it is just super, super rich and full of amazing stuff. But I feel like my understanding of teenagers has been really transformed by reading this book. There are things that you experience as a teenager, and then you kind of forget once you walk out of these, and you don't, even as a teenager, you don't really have a language to put around them. That this is really helpful for you. You know, from time to time, I'll have conversations with parents or small group leaders or whoever, and they'll make an observation about kids, and I'll say, well, you know, it's kind of like yada yada yada, and I'll drop something from the book or from from Hurt, and they'll say, oh my gosh, I've never heard it said that way, and that puts such a fine point on it. So just very, very helpful in understanding what it's like to be an adolescent today. And it's not stupid culture stuff. It's really deep, insightful stuff based on some academic work. So it's a great book. I think he mentioned at the convention that they're working on perhaps an updated version, maybe even with some new research and stuff. So that might be worth keeping an eye out for. But I don't know. Yeah, I think cool. that there are some good books. Pick. There's some books you have to read. And I think this is one of them.
Excellent pick.
Thank you.
Not nearly as good as TED Talks, but still good.
Hey, have
still
you guys good. Heard of Facebook.com?
I knew you were going to do that. I knew it. I made that joke in my head earlier.
You can make a profile and tell people. I'm just kidding. All right.
I take it back. I hate your pick.
Hey, you know what? For an episode that was totally all the plans fell apart, I think it's not so shabby.
I mean, we're pretty awesome.
Not so shabby. So if you'd like to get in touch with us, you can. You cannot leave a comment at youthhacks.com because you know what? I took away comments. I didn't.
Why?
Because they weren't super active.
They were good. They made me feel like someone cared.
You know, my thought was like they're not super active. And when people do comment, it's like there's not tons of conversation going. It's like a little note.
But what about Brian? Brian, I apologize.
Dude, Brian's our friend. Brian's got my phone number.
Lucky.
So anyway, but you can send us an email at podcast@youthhacks.com. Or you can find us on Twitter or on the internet.
That's true. And also happy Mother's Day.
Also happy. It's my wife's first Mother's Day.
Oh, that's really awesome.
Yeah, I'm not doing
it. I actually sent my mom a card.
Oh, that's awesome.
Kind of a big deal.
That is kind of a big deal.
Anyway.
All right, guys. Well, thanks. It was fun.
Yes, it was.
Bye.